I needed something that I could keep doing up and refurbing. I was just looking at it from the point of view of the houses. I just didn't realise that I was increasing the value of the property. Hello, welcome back to the Commercial Property Investor Podcast, and I'm your host, Jerry Alexander. Now, we have a heap of interviews coming up, so stay tuned for lots of stories, lessons, inspiration, and knowledge coming your way very soon. And today, I want to talk to you about our first commercial project. It's something I touch on every now and then when I'm out talking on the road, and people always seem intrigued about that step. So I'm going to go through why we decided to do commercial, how I found that project, how we financed it, what it was, what it became, and the lessons. Just before we get stuck into that, though, I just want to say thank you. I know I do this a few times, but thank you for the recent 5-star reviews on Spotify and Apple. I'm really grateful for the feedback and the support, because it's so good to hear from our audience to understand whether the topics we're covering are useful or maybe not so much. And when I get messages and comments about specific episodes and subjects that people have enjoyed, that really helps. Otherwise, without that feedback, it's a bit like trying to hit a target in a dark room with a blindfold on. So please keep the reviews and that information, that feedback coming, so that we can formulate future episodes. And I've been on the road over the last 2 weeks, and I want to thank all of you networkers for being so enthusiastic and welcoming at the different places I've been. And I want to say to those of you who didn't know me before, welcome to the podcast. Okay, so let's go through the detail and rationale of why on earth we bought that first commercial project. And maybe just to set the scene, I should maybe tell you about what happened before that project. So like a lot of investors new to this game, I bought some houses. I read some books, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Wealth, Richest Man in Babylon, various different books. And I thought, right, okay, this sounds like this is what I need to do. I need to start buying some houses, doing the BRRRR strategy. So we bought a few. I did a lot of the work myself. I really did. I remember the first project we actually did was we actually built a house. Mm-hmm. Speculative build of a house. That's a whole other topic. But basically, in terms of buy to let, that was a build to let, that one. But anyways, as in terms of buying a second-hand property and letting it out and refurbing and letting it out, this one had 2 bedrooms. It was a wimpy house. Some of you will probably recognize this. Basically, 2 bedrooms upstairs, terraced house. The stairs came out of the sitting room, so there was a sort of wooden banister up the side. And I remember, one thing that I do remember about that property is everything that stood still was covered in Artex. Ceilings, walls, stairwells, you name it. So a big part of my doing the work myself, because, hey, that's what you do when you're starting out, is it, I think, was scraping off the tops of the Artex and then plastering it all up. Man, it took me forever. And then I ripped out carpets, did the joinery. I didn't do electrics or the gas and water, of course. But, you know, a lot of the work that was needed, the grunt work, was done by me. The landscaping was a small garden out the front, small garden out the back. And then furnishing it, because we then let it out. And that worked out okay. And we bought some more. Cash flow wasn't great, but it was slowly building up. And that's really kind of where we were at. And I was thinking, right, this is all right, but I've got a target I want to get for cash flow, and this isn't quite moving at the pace I wanted. Now, maybe I wasn't doing it very well, and I certainly didn't have lots of networking around to understand different strategies. Certainly SA wasn't around, and there wasn't many strategies to actually really improve that income. You bought it, you did it up, maybe you added something, but ultimately it was about trying to get some cash flow, but it wasn't brilliant. So I don't know exactly what made me think about commercial. I'm not even sure if I did, but all I wanted was to find more cash flow. Maybe a bigger deal. And for any of you that have read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, or listened to some of the episodes I've spoken about this on, you'll know that there's a game. And the board game's called Cashflow 101. There is an additional section 202, but basically the original game, Cashflow 101, teaches you a lot about investing. And effectively, you're buying assets in this game to replace your expenditure. So as soon as you've got enough assets producing a passive income to cover your expenditure, then effectively you're out of the rat race. You don't have to necessarily continue with the wage that you're earning by working for someone else or for running your own business. And that was the principle. The thing is, on the game, there's two different sets of cards. One, small deals. There's actually a few other cards, but in terms of deals and buying assets, there's small deals and big deals. And the small deals are the sort of things that I'd been doing. Maybe a two-bedroom house, might be a one-bedroom flat. There's just little projects to buy, do up, maybe refinance, get them rented out, and enjoy the cash flow. But on the other side, there's this pile called big deals. And I'm turning these deals over, playing this game, thinking, this is all great. This gets me out of the rat race. But where are these deals in real life? How do I find this stuff? So you'd be turning over a card, it might be 60 apartments. That's a brilliant card. 60 apartments. Right. How do I find one of them? Or pizza franchise. It's like, well, I'm not entirely sure I want to do that. That's a funny story, by the way. I'm not entirely sure if I want to do that. Maybe it's a mechanic shop. And there's just these different deals. So I'm not necessarily looking for commercial office space. I'm just looking for a bigger deal. And how did I find it? Well, it actually took me about 18 months. So I was a member of a gym locally, and I would go along, got to know one or two of the people there, be there regularly. And then back to cash flow, I had actually bought the board game, and occasionally I would run a game. So I'd invite a few people around, maybe, in fact, at the time, as my financial advisor, a business partner. And then one particular time, I invited a chap that I knew from the gym. So he came along. Nice guy, still speak to him now. And he was looking to start in Resi. And so for his point of view, it was like, oh, you should come along and have a game, have a go at this game, but also just have some chat around the game. We'll have some food and drink or whatever. And it's always the conversations around the game that really help. And during this particular time, I was explaining about how I was trying to find one of these cards. How do I find one of these bigger deals? I want to find something that's multiple incomes rather than just one, whether it's multiple clients, customers, whatever it is. And he said, my father might be selling something like that out of his pension. So anyway, cut a long story short. Took a while. We ended up buying our first commercial deal because of two things: networking and playing cash flow and inviting people to it. And that has been a reoccurring theme for me over the years. Finding deals through networking and specifically running cash flow games. I'm not saying you go out and start doing all that, but that's what's worked for me. So that's how we found the building. And just to give you a description of what it was a two-story, 1945 red brick building. It was built for the RAF, or the MOD certainly, and it was next to a runway which had been there since the First World War, actually, and this building was relatively new on the site during the Second World War, just at the tail end of the Second World War, and it was for the officers. So it was actually very cellular, and what I mean by that is, although it was 10,000 square feet, quite a big building, or at least for us it seemed big, actually, the biggest room is probably 500. Actually, no. I just think that through, actually. The biggest room is probably nearly 1,000 square feet. Not quite. There was one kitchen, three sets of toilets, a central stair, a little kind of reception area that had been built out of a bit of space that had been enclosed. Tube lighting, fluorescent tube lighting, every room throughout. No suspended ceilings, just straight onto the concrete. Brown carpets, which had kind of morphed into something more than just a carpet. Probably just leave that there. Bitumen impregnated skirting boards. So they weren't timber. They were some kind of funny odd material. The bathrooms were all, and the partitions in there were all rock solid stuff that had been formed out of something or another. There was an old oil fired boiler, which was older than me, which is saying something. And it was All the perimeter windows were all single glazed metal frame windows with gaps you could, you know, pass things through, and had a flat asphalt roof. So basically, this property had been occupied, but not particularly looked after for a very long time. And sure, it would have had some refurbishments at some point, but the old heating system was the cast iron, big fat pipes. I mean, some of you will know exactly the type of building I'm talking about. But the key thing was it was cellular and it was 95% occupied. In fact, it may have even been 100% occupied. I remember going in and having a meeting in room number, I think it's room number 20 it is, as it is. And there was a little meeting room table set up in it and four chairs and a window and two doors. And sitting in there, hovering over this brown carpet, discussing this building and trying to work out a price for it. And I think that might have been the only space that was vacant. And it was only because it had been used as a meeting room. So what we came to, right, was that, in fact, let me just finish off the stats. So 10,000 square foot gross, net lettable, in other words, the space that you could actually sell or get somebody to occupy was about 7,450 square feet, give or take a few. There were about 20 odd tenants within 30 units. So some of them had a couple. Now, it does sound a lot, but it wasn't really. The total income was £55,000 a year, right? Not exactly a lot. And actually, it was being let for around about £11 a square foot, something like that. Now, actually, there were, the net income was £24,000. So the costs were pretty minimal. There wasn't anybody looking after the buildings per se. There wasn't any commercial. Basically, it's been run on a shoestring, which maybe from the description you could maybe understand it has been. And we came to a price of £240,000, plus some costs, plus VAT. And if you think about it, let me take a moment to thank Office R&D for supporting the podcast. It's really important to us that we only work with sponsors that we've used ourselves. It's all about being authentic, right? Office R&D is the best flexible workspace platform we've come across, and believe me, we've tried a few systems over the last 20 years. Office R&D helps us manage our invoicing, customer community, reporting, building access, and many more aspects of our day-to-day operations. Why not book yourself a free demo to see how they can help you free up more time to grow your business? Follow the partner link in the show notes.
The income was £24,000, so it was worth, in the eyes of the seller and the commercial agent, which there wasn't one, by the way, because this was off market, was 240 grand. So we paid the price of roughly a four-bedroom house for a fairly substantial building with income. The interesting thing is, now when I look back and understand the market a bit better, the price was dictated by the income, but also the occupancy, which was high, and the price they were paying dictated the value. Because actually, if they'd been paying a lot more, the property would have been worth a lot more. And what I discovered was that it maybe wasn't being rented out at the right rate. So slowly, over time, we changed it from £11 a square foot up to about £20 a square foot. And that really had a significant impact on things as we moved on. Before I get into that, let me just tell you about how we financed it. So, sacrilegious, I know, I sold some houses. Sold some houses to get the deposit to be able to buy this property. Now, we financed it with a high street bank, not always possible these days, although, fingers crossed, we may be able to do some refinance with one soon. But it was 100% occupied, or 95, whatever, which is good in terms of finance. And as I say, it was only the price of maybe a three or four bedroom house. They wanted a 70% loan to value at the highest level. And the key things they were looking for was experience. Now, did we have experience of running commercial property? No. Did we have experience of doing up, refurbing and letting residential property? Absolutely. And then they wanted a loan to value 70%, so we sold some houses that helped with that. And then the critical one for them was affordability. can you afford the loan if this doesn't work? And the answer was, sure, because actually a 240 grand loan, really, it wasn't 240 grand, sorry, 70% of that, whatever that is not actually a huge amount of money. So we tick those boxes. Now, those boxes have changed. There's more being added since then. But nevertheless, the principles are kind of still the same. The loan-to-value that they want to set, the experience they want you to have, and if this all goes pear-shaped, can you still afford the loan? So what happened next? Well, over time, we developed the 30 units into 35 units, so we split some more up. We refurbed each and every one as we went along. So when somebody moved out, which happens, then it's like, great, okay, I'll do the same thing I've been doing in the houses. I'll do up the room. I'll maybe put in a suspended ceiling, put in some wooden skirtings, paint it, put in, replace the carpet, and let the unit out and try for a higher rent. So we'd maybe push the rent up from £11 to maybe £15, something like that, a square foot. And that's what we do with each room. And in the interim, now, by the way, this was over a period of about 4 or 5 years, whilst I was doing other things. So the windows were replaced, the boiler was replaced, and there was a few other things that we did internally, like communal areas, like kitchen, toilets, eventually we redid. But a lot of that was funded out of cash flow over those years, because, just to give you, again, a bit of context, I was running my own business separate from this, and I wasn't taking any income out of this business. So when we had the houses, didn't take any income out. When we bought this, didn't take any income out. Just left it in, kept recycling it, reusing it to continue developing and building up momentum. And then what happened was the income over that period went from 55 grand, I was telling you about the gross, to 155 grand. So the income, the net income, actually tripled. So that was really interesting. Then what happened was I found the next building. And incidentally, the clients in that property, most of them stayed with us during that period. There were some that moved out as we were refurbing, but some of them didn't move. And what we actually decided to do, and we asked them all, was we want to do up the windows, replace the boiler, do the corridors and the toilets. Done it, a big old list. However, in order for us to do that, the building needs to pay us more income to be able to fund that. And we actually managed to get almost everyone, bar one person actually, to agree to up to a third of an increase, which was brilliant, but it was starting at a low point. And that just allowed us to get on with that work, to get some finance for doing that work, and then increase the income. So what it also did, of course, which I wasn't really thinking about, was increase the value, but more on that in a second. So then we found, or I found, building number 2 or maybe 3. I'm not sure, actually, if just between building 1 and the next big one is that's when we actually bought a high street shop. I think that may well have been the second building, actually. It was 70 grand. So it's just another deal, right? But just to tell you how that one worked out differently. £70,000. There was really no room for improvement. It was a leased space, single occupant, albeit had 3 or 4 units within it, but it's on a high street, single unit. The rental on that high street basically was giving you a 10% yield. That's it. So nothing changed with that property for years. There wasn't really anything we could do with it. And funnily enough, that's the sort of property I thought, when I was looking for big deals and looking at commercial, that's probably the sort of thing I could start with and get my hands around. But actually, they're a bit vanilla. Now, if you've got loads of money to park to earn 10%, 20%, not 20, yeah, great, 10, 11, 12% yield, then maybe those are right up your street, as it were. But actually, for me, I needed something that I could keep doing up and refurbing. I was just looking at it from the point of view of the houses. I just didn't realise that I was increasing the value of the property as well as the income. So that's when the penny dropped, because when we went to the bank and said, right, here's building number 2 or 3. And we think we can do exactly the same as we've been doing. Here's the details. It's slightly bigger. Da, 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 da. We had to get our first commercial property valued. And that's when the penny dropped. Because when the valuer phoned me up and I was on a roof, because our other business is to do roofing. I was on a roof. Call came in. speaking to the guy, and when the call finished, I'm like, wow, I've made more money, or at least on paper, in that deal than I've made in this other business in the last 5 years. So the penny dropped. I'm like, right, I can totally affect the value here by increasing the income and being creative. So that's actually when it all changed for me. And I decided this project, this commercial stuff, needed my full-time attention. And actually, I stepped back from my other couple of businesses. I remained a director or whatever, or a shareholder. But actually, I then stopped taking income from there, started taking income from this business, and really focused in on it. And we bought a 21,000 square foot building then, which is twice the size. Again, I look back and think, was I scared? Probably. Can't really remember. It was a 55-unit, partially derelict building, and it wasn't that expensive. It was another 100 grand or so. So it wasn't a huge leap. And again, it was maybe the price of a 5-bedroom house instead of a 4. Now, I bought that building in 2009. So some of you will know what happened in 2008 and 9, but maybe we should talk about that another time. So the first one, the learnings from that first one for me, and I'm hoping that going through all this just paints a picture for you that this is actually quite possible. You don't have to find the absolute stonker first off. You can buy something that's fairly reasonably priced, fairly reasonable income, and just work on it. And the lessons for me looking back on that one, number one, networking was key. I didn't know quite what I was looking for, but I knew I was looking for something, and I was out trying to meet people. And I actually went through the commercial network. I spoke to commercial agents, some of them that would speak to me. And the feedback generally was, I wouldn't bother because I would stick to the residential thing. Most of the commercial stuff gets bought by other people who are already in the swim. They've got a black book. None of these deals come to market. I'm like, great, this is really supportive. So actually, out networking found this deal for me off market. Now, the second thing I think really for me, looking back, learning on that is don't listen to commercial agents if they're not supportive. Now, I'm not saying be blind to what they're saying, but just make sure you take it with a pinch of salt and don't let any of them talk you out of it because they think the market isn't good enough or there's not enough strength in the market, whatever. Sure, take what they say. I cover this lots in other podcasts because at the end of the day, it's about the target that you're after, the specific market demographic and the specific offer that you're trying to put out there. There's loads of other podcasts about that. So the important points here, networking, don't listen to commercial agent support in case, unless they're supportive, sorry. The next one was, I was actually lucky. So I don't mean lucky I found the deal, although there's, you know, two sides to that, right? Lucky in that, yeah, I found a good deal. Not so lucky it took me 18 months to find it and about another year to buy it. But what was lucky about it was the right size. And I didn't know this at the time. It was the right size to afford a person to look after the building on a full-time basis so I didn't have to be there. That didn't happen straight away. But what it's allowed us to do is then do other buildings and leave the plate spinning and somebody else is spinning it. And I think that's really important. It was luck for me, and that's why I look for buildings now that are 10,000 square foot plus. Actually, I look for ones a lot bigger because the overhead can be shared amongst many more square feet. But actually, 10,000 is kind of your starter. Now, it does depend on where you are. If you're in an area where there's higher value, higher rents, well, maybe 3,000 or 4,000 square foot would work. But where I work, where I focus, 10,000 is kind of the minimum number. Now, the next learning, which I've talked about, is the income affects value. So the more you can increase the income, the more down the track you can affect value and possibly leverage against that. Another little learning, which I haven't mentioned actually on this podcast so far, was that when I bought the building, round back in the car park, there was 5 containers. There was 5 20-foot containers. Now there's actually a 40-foot and 5 20-foots. We've managed to squeeze another, a larger one in there. But man, did that teach me a lot. I love that business, as you know, the container storage business, and that's where it came from. So we actually got this building 20 years ago this year. 20 years ago. So 20 years ago, I got into the container storage business. It was just 5 containers. But it was really interesting. It taught me lots. And it helped when I looked at the next buildings that if I could use that blueprint elsewhere, it really helped the numbers. And then the last thing I just want to share about learnings from that, I mentioned this in a podcast this week or last week, I can't remember, in the last couple of episodes, keep testing. It was Monday's episode. Keep testing and learning the market. That's what really helped, because actually during that time that we developed out of that building, sure, there were some other competitors came and went, but actually our occupancy stayed pretty well. In fact, it's remained at 95% occupied on average through all of these years. The worst year was 89%. And I think that was because a couple of large customers moved out. It just took a while to fill the rooms back up. Some years it's been 100% occupied all year, even though there's all those units. So again, that might be luck. But also I think it's understanding the market, offering something that's pretty specific and has has key differentiators on it. Again, back to the podcast on Monday. And that's a lot of learnings for me from that project. And I think that I was fortunate to find it and to buy it and to then learn all that stuff from it. But, you know, some people would say to me, Jerry, that's all very well, but it was years ago and you just can't find deals like that now. Let me tell you, it's nonsense. Firstly, it's all relative. The price is still roughly based on a multiple of 10 where I work. The areas I'm investing, that's still kind of roughly the rule of thumb. That hasn't changed. If a building is not being run to the optimum level, then it will by default be cheaper, either because there's unoccupied space, which needs to be valued down, because you have to go and find a client. You have to go and do some marketing. You maybe have to do up. All that needs to discount off the price. And the property just might not be rented out at the right market rate. And if that's the case, well, like that building, like this building I'm talking about, it was fully let, but it just wasn't let out at the right price. Sure, I need to improve the quality of it, but the market could take that because there was no competitors in the market that had really good quality, so we could just keep pushing up. And I've seen lots of properties just like this for, say, 300 grand. Sure, they might be slightly more than 240, but not much. And they've had income. They just need some loving and creativity. So I think, I'm hoping that by sharing a bit more details about that particular one, that you can see that actually there's a logic to it. It wasn't too scary. And maybe I haven't discussed fully about the emotion of it. I do remember going through, looking at this building a few times, having these discussions, just taking it day by day, not making a big decision. But then when I was looking for finance, I did actually go out and find someone, a partner, and said, oh, you need to come and have a look at this. I had a look at it. I met them at networking. And thankfully, we didn't do it as a joint venture. If we did, I'd only have half of it all. Now, maybe it'd be bigger, but I don't think joint venture would have been right on this one. So actually, I was scared. And the reason why I wanted the joint venture partner was because I didn't want to do it on my own. I wasn't sure if it was going to work. In hindsight, it was a good deal. So just to finish off, if you're looking out to find these sorts of properties, some that have similarities to this, then talk to me. This is exactly the kind of thing we can help you with. Our job on the consulting side of CPI, Commercial Property Investor, is to hold your hand through the process, to minimize the mistakes, and critically, to speed up the process. This took me ages. That's because I was concentrating on other things, of course. And subsequently, we've bought another six since that one that are multi-let buildings. And what's been really exciting to me is seeing lots of our CPI customers, so customers that have come to us for mentoring and support, go out and buy similar buildings for their first commercial projects. So you don't have to go and buy a shop. You can buy this sort of project. At the end of the day, you have to buy what's suitable to you. And some of the people that come and work with us have gone and bought more basic projects to get started. But I know of well over 20 similar buildings that have been bought by members of our network. And a few of them have been interviewed on the show. You will have heard some of their stories. And if you're ready to get on with that and do a similar project, then just reach out. Let's see if we can help you do the same. Okay, so thank you so much for listening. Thanks to Megan for the suggestion of today's topic. She thought maybe I should discuss this a little bit more. And maybe I'll go into one or two of the other buildings and some of the logic behind buying those as well and some of the lessons. If you want to hear that, maybe just drop me a message. Otherwise, if it's all tumbleweed, then I won't go back there. Anyway, thank you all very much. Look forward to speaking to you again soon. As I mentioned at the start, lots of great interviews coming up, a real breadth of different topics. So stay tuned. We're going to keep you inspired and informed. Thank you very much. Speak to you later.